Hey, today I'm talking with Rick Snyder. He's the CEO of Three Hats. We're talking the importance of intuition, relationship building, good listening, and so much more. You got a lot to get out of this one. Thanks for being here. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Rick Snyder is an international business coach, writer, speaker, and consultant. Rick has launched three businesses and is an expert in mentoring, training, and teaching others how to utilize the process of bringing intuition into an effective business plan and company culture. He is the CEO of Three Hats. His breakthrough strategies have been implemented by executives and businesses in Europe, Canada, Asia, and America. He has lived the last few years in France and brings global perspective to his teachings. The coaches of Three Hats are certified coaching representatives of eMyth, the globally known brand that has a worldwide presence and reach in over 145 countries. Say hi to everyone, Rick.
How you doing, everyone? Good to meet you, and thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great having you here, Rick. And before we dive into Three Hats, and talking about coaching and intuition and stuff, could you talk a little bit about what encouraged you to be an entrepreneur? I mean, was it something that you wanted to do? Like you started out by creating a business at age 10, or did you have a hero that you wanted to follow?
I would say a couple things. One is I remember being like you just said, about 10 years old, and my neighbor and I were walking around the neighborhood trying to sell calendars halfway through the year. So if you imagine it's July of, let's say, 1985 or 84, whatever it was, and thinking that we had this great idea to sell these calendars because he had a bunch of leftover ones in his garage, these beautiful Mylar calendars, and going by, and they were, I think, out of pity, a lot of our neighbors were buying them. But it really inspired this, hey, we can kind of take charge of our own livelihood a little bit, and it's fun and exciting to sell, and we think we're good at it. And so somehow that lit something up in me of this idea of creating and creating our own thing. And so I think that's really what the strain was for me, the thread, was this interest in creating my own content, creating my own approach. And I think that's really, for me, the birthplace of entrepreneurialism.
Nice. It's neat to know where, you know, kind of people get their ideas from, how it developed, and they were able to make it happen over time. So as an entrepreneur, what would you say was one lesson that you've learned over time? You've created three businesses. What would you say is one of those biggest lessons you got out of all of it?
I think one of the biggest ones is it doesn't have to be so hard, where most entrepreneurs do it on their own at first and they think they're all alone. And that's what I did the first couple times, is I didn't have any mentoring. I didn't have someone on my advisory board showing me how to make it a little easier and do it a little better. And so I learned through a lot of trial and tribulation, and I think it could have been a lot easier if I had actually recruited a little more mentoring in the beginning. And so I think I learned that a little later in the game, but it really helped me once I started to be maybe a little bit more humble, but also just a little more, hey, I need help. And I can't do this alone. And that's where things really started to take off in a whole new direction, when I allowed that space to let others actually help me.
That's cool, because I think a lot of times and people tend to think, I just got to do this, and they don't reach for help. They don't ask for help. And that probably in itself leads to a lot of stumbling that may not have had to be.
100%.
Very cool. So now you're the CEO of Three Hats. Could you explain the name and talk a little bit about what its mission is and how it works?
Yeah, so to me, Three Hats has two different meanings. One of them is just the services that we offer. So basically business coaching, training, and consulting. And so those are all a little bit different depending on what businesses need support with. And so my team of coaches and I will go and create different services or different customized applications of those three areas. So that's one meaning of three different hats that we wear. And then the other one is actually something that's more related to the eMyth perspective. And you mentioned I'm an eMyth certified business coaching company. And so the three hats of eMyth that they made famous about 40 years ago is the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. And if you think about it, every business has to represent and wear those three hats, where the technician is the one who does the work and the craft of whatever business that is. So if I'm a teacher, it's the one that's actually doing the teaching is the technician. And then there's the manager level, you know, the district manager, the regional manager, who's making sure all the teachers are showing up and everything's okay, and the larger system that is moving forward, and to make sure the you know, district is profitable and all those things. And then there's the entrepreneur level, looking at the whole area at the 30,000 foot level, like who's actually establishing policy and who's designing better curriculum for the next year. And so that's going to be more the entrepreneurial hat that every business has to think about.
That's excellent. The you know, and it fits so well, the idea of the three hats. That's it's a nice descriptive sort of title. It makes it easy to understand, I think, you know, and envision what you're talking about. The so we've gotten into a little bit about the what eMyth is, and so I'm glad you explained that. Do you think that most professionals could benefit from a coach? Because I kind of hear you leaning that way. And, you know, how can it really play a key role in helping to manage change in a building or organization?
Yeah, so I would say that for sure it's important to have some kind of advisor or mentor in your corner. And that could look many different ways. It doesn't have to be a coach. It could also be trusted advisors that you know in your life. But I would recommend someone outside of you. And here's why. In my experience, all of us have blind spots. All of us have things that we can't see about ourselves. And so we almost need that outside perspective to be able to see the things that we can't. Whether it's in business, it might be how we get in our own way around money, around managing time, around managing people. There might be things that we just don't see, or we just don't know that there's a better way. And so it's so helpful to have a sounding board of some sort that allows us to learn about how we're showing up as leaders and managers.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, there's that saying, you don't know what you don't know until you need to know it, or I screwed that up. But, you know, the blind spots appear that way if you're not getting someone to kind of help you to be there to assist you through those times or those areas, or just to kind of say, did you look at that?
Exactly. And I think, you know, if you look at professional athletes or sports, when people, even like Roger Federer, the greatest tennis player of all time, arguably, has a coach. And you'll see in his game where he gets a little better when he gets the right coach. And then he even has to change things up every once in a while and maybe switch coaches, maybe have a time where he doesn't have a coach and he gets to see what that's like. But you'll see the best performers have coaches because they know it takes their performance to that next place.
I love that. I think that's an excellent example when you're talking about you know, the level of tennis that he's at. The only way you stay there is if you do have somebody helping you get through your difficulties or what you're not, where you're not making adjustments, you're not seeing what you're doing wrong. That's an excellent example. One of the things that I hear when I read and I look at what you talk about is that it really seems like you have a passion to help others be successful. If so, what inspires you to do this?
Yeah, so I feel like my life, I have more meaning in my life when I can help other people elevate in their own life. And so for me, there's something about a exponential effect where I think a lot of times, if you read the newspaper or the news, as we all know, there's so much negative press and negative news every day. It can get really depressing or feel like, what's this all for? Why are we doing this? What's going on here, planet Earth right now? And I think that when we can each bring it back to our personal level selves and our personal sense of, well, what can I impact in my world? Instead of feeling helpless about what's happening on the front page, what is happening on my front page and my front door and my community? And if there's a lot of teachers obviously listening to the show right now, I'm imagining a lot of teachers feel that same way where, hey, I can make an impact in my classroom. I can make an impact to the next generation. And that's meaningful. That brings me meaning and purpose, because then that's going to have that ripple effect to whoever they impact in their lives. And so for me, that is the fuel that really gets me going in the morning, is how can I leave the world a little bit better than I found it, even if it's just my corner of the neighborhood. so to speak.
I love that. That's awesome. Because that's, you know, it's a big part of what helps teachers work with kids and all educators. Kind of what fuels you is that same sort of, you know, desire to help, want others to be successful, and that continued drive to try and do that. So one of the things that I want to do is that you can't help but, you know, pick up on, and it's very much right there in your writings and in what Three Hats is all about, that there's a focus on the importance of listening to your intuition. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, what you're talking about and why?
Yeah, so I'm writing a book on this very topic about bringing intuition into the business space. And so it's very alive for me, this conversation right now. And a lot of it is, it's for some personal reasons where I think in high school, I started to get more in touch with my own intuition and really listening to this deeper presence and this deeper voice inside of me that wasn't coming from my thoughts. It wasn't coming from my head, but I would say an octave deeper. And I've learned when I start to tune into that deeper gut feeling and that deeper sense that it's always served me in my life. Even when it seemed to go against what other people around me were saying and their strong opinions, or maybe even what the data or the spreadsheet was saying. And I find this true in coaching businesses all the time, that when leaders start to actually listen to and trust their gut instincts and start to separate that from their fears, or start to separate that from their day-to-day thoughts, that there's a deeper wisdom and a deeper intelligence that we actually all have access to. And so for me, one of my quick definitions is intuition is an embodied knowing that comes from listening to what wants to happen next. And I think that comes with a lot of practice and starting to tune into that frequency, we could say.
That's excellent, because I think even one point I've seen you talk about that gut feeling that comes out, and you know, and that really I want to take some of the words you just used and kind of use that as a segue. You know, that it requires you to become a better listener, is what it seems like, and paying attention to what's around you and what's going on around you and the people who you're interacting with. You know, I really hear that out of what you're saying. So let's kind of talk about that for a minute. So could you talk about the importance of being a good listener and developing a strong organizational culture? Because I don't think you're going to be, you know, this is where the intuition's coming into this, isn't it? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, 100% is that in order for really us to connect with that deeper intuition or that deeper intelligence that's happening right now, and in business it happens all the time, where intuition, like I think salespeople are using this all the time, marketers are using this all the time, good managers and good leaders are using this all the time. They might not call it intuition, but another word I use sometimes is just, hey, it's another source of data. And so when you get that gut feel that the person across the table from you is leaning this way or that way, or they're hesitating in the conversation, or they have a specific agenda that they're not talking about, to me, that's all listening to your intuition in those moments. And then do you choose to say something? Do you not choose to say something? That's another conversation. But it's starting to listen to all the data points that are happening around you all the time. And so to me, the art of listening is listening to those inner signals, and there's those inner cues that are going on inside our body all the time. And so if we're just in our thoughts, in our preconceived notions and our biases, we're actually not allowing our inner intelligence to speak to us. And we're not allowing our body and the wisdom of all of our experience to actually speak to what's happening in the moment. And one little piece of neuroscience that is fascinating to me that I'm bringing into my book also is we actually have three brains, not just one. And what I mean by that is we actually have a whole neural network in our gut, and also in our heart. And neuroscience has been discovering this the last 10, 15 years or so, that we actually have three brains. And so to me, that's what our intuition is actually really about. It's about getting out of our day-to-day rational, logical mind, which gets in the way of our intuition, actually, interestingly enough, and actually listening to tune into our gut and heart in our different choices in life.
That's interesting, because that would be, you know, I would think that basically by not listening to that intuition, that if you're a salesperson, you're going to cost yourself the sales. You know, in the case of in a school setting and such, we're going to lose the relationship development with the kids or with the community or whoever it is that we're trying to connect with. And so in essence, we're going to lose the sale also, because if we're just thinking about, you know, I don't know, like, you know, in the Charlie Brown universe, the, you know, in the cartoons, the adults always talk like, wah, 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 wah. You know, if you're talking and all I'm hearing is wah, 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 because I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next, that's not good, right?
Exactly. And that's where we lose that deeper conversation that's possible. And to me, listening is the only place where you can actually deepen relationships and deepen that conversation, because you're actually making room not just for what you think and what you already know, but you're actually making room for what the other person might contribute to you. And you're opening space for a deeper dialogue that way.
With the head and heart here happening, do you think that, and it's going to help, because if you are better at listening, it's going to help you make a connection with that person. I mean, let's get beyond the word relationship, but literally where they feel a connection also, that you actually heard something that they were saying, and, you know, however you did it, you know, whatever you recognize that, or whatever they recognize in what you said, they realize, hey, you know, Steve is really listening to me. Is that what's key here in this combination of the heart and the head?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I would agree with that. And in a lot of the work that I've done, I think what it really boils down to, if I can make a big generalization,
sure,
this is pretty big here, so bear with me here, is that I think all human beings on some level really deeply want the experience of being understood and want the experience of being accepted. Even if we don't agree with somebody, can we accept where they're coming from? Can we kind of get their point of view? Can we understand why they did what they did, even if we don't agree with it? And I think that's really the key to a lot of negotiations and a lot of deal making and dialogue, and once again, sales too, is getting the other world of the person across the table. Just like with teachers and kids also, right? Like, if I can get Johnny's world, even if I don't agree with it, but can I at least get where he's coming from or give him the experience of being seen and being heard, then he'll relax. His nervous system will tend to relax. And then we might actually get to a more productive place together.
That's excellent. And one of the things I want to make sure I get you to talk about here is that I've seen where you've written a little bit about the obstacles to good listening, by the way. Can you just kind of mention some of those that get in the way of being able to do this? Because if we're not using our brains the right way and we're not doing good listening, you have these six obstacles. So what would you say are some of the worst?
Yeah, so I think one of the things I talk about is, what are the enemies of intuition, or the thing that sometimes just gets in our way of a deeper listening to our natural intelligence? It's another way to say that. And so the first one that I mentioned already is our logical mind, our rational mind. So an example is, you know, Steve Jobs from Apple used to walk around barefoot when he just couldn't get to the next innovation or the next place, or he was stuck on a problem. He would literally get out of his office space in Palo Alto, California, walk around barefoot in his neighborhood, a couple blocks around, and he would start to slow down and get these huge epiphanies about, oh, wow, what if we had a gizmo that could store 10,000 songs? Hence the iPod, right? Where like all these like new ideas would come along, or maybe something about design and user interface. And so this happens all the time. If we interrupt our normal day-to-day thinking, we literally can access a deeper subconscious. And that's where a lot of our insights actually come from. And so it might seem counterintuitive to use that phrase, but the mind actually gets in the way of our deeper intelligence. So that's kind of interesting. A couple other ones that I've seen that sometimes sabotage that deeper listening are just when we doubt ourselves. So we might get a gut hit about something, but then we don't listen to it, or we talk ourselves out of it, or we backpedal, or we get that sense about, oh, that principle, I don't know, something feels weird about that dynamic there. But then we talk ourselves, oh, but he's such a nice guy, or he's got a great family, or da 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 da, and then we don't take credence to our original intuition that we had, right? But if we go back and track, we knew that we felt something at that time. We knew we had that sense, but we discounted it. So those are a couple. And a couple last ones I'll just share is sometimes fear gets in the way of our deeper listening and our intuition. And so sometimes our emotions, strong emotions or fear, can get in the way where maybe I know I have a gut hit about something, but I'm actually afraid of what that means. Or, wow, if I really take that track, I'm going to be so out of my comfort zone. For example, if I can feel that this job isn't right for me anymore, that's going to mean a lot of life changes. And maybe I just don't want to deal with that, even though the feeling is really clear. And so do I go with my gut or do I let my fear hijack my orientation?
That's awesome right there. All of them are, but that one in itself, I wonder how many really bad decisions have been made just simply because of fear. You know, they could have made a better decision.
Especially when you start talking about money, like when money gets involved in the conversation with businesses or investment or stakes are higher, that's when fear shows up, right?
Right. Yeah, I think all of us have that experience where, you know, you just want to hear what you want to hear. And the fear is that it's not really going to work out, or it's not going to go the way you think it's going to go. And it's, you know, suddenly now instead of being excited and you got all the adrenaline flowing going, yay for me, this is going to work good. Now suddenly you're going, am I thinking the right way? And you start questioning everything. Yeah, good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like when that honeymoon's over, do I still want to stay in this relationship?
Yes. There's a commercial a few years ago that I love where it came out where this coach had just won the biggest game ever. I mean, he hadn't, but what he had done was he had just taken on the team that had just won the biggest game ever the year before. And so they said, now, coach, since you're the coach of this team that's won this game, what are you going to do now? And he goes, well, now I'm going to quit because I'm on top. And you know, just quit while I'm ahead. You know, sorry, it just seems to fit. I don't
know. No, I mean, that's definitely, yeah, that definitely can show up for people is – maybe the fear of how do we repeat this or how do we have another successful year? And so I think all those things are valid and they challenge us. And so all of those can be obstacles to that deeper listening and intuition.
I appreciate you sharing that. That's, you know, there's so many of these types of obstacles that stop us. And I think you've hit some key ones there. So let's kind of transition into talking about schools and school systems for a second. And by the way, if it's okay, I'd like to point out that everybody, Rick was a substitute teacher for a while, and he has a teacher in his family here. So, but he was a substitute. Now, I want to point that out because anybody who's ever been a substitute teacher understands that we can be, you know, be abused, man. I was a substitute teacher for several months before I got my first teaching job, and it made me appreciate the substitutes that I needed when I became a classroom teacher. Any thoughts about being a substitute and lessons you learned?
Oh man, we only have half an hour.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that comes to mind right now is I realized over time if I didn't get command of the room within the first 5 minutes, I was screwed. And so I think there's something about that as a substitute teacher, especially because you don't have credibility yet. You don't have relationship that you've built and trust that you've built. So you literally have to do that right away, or you set yourself up for the rest of the day of not being listened to and respected.
That is right on point too. It's amazing how that lesson comes fast because otherwise you're not going to be able to do this very long.
So that's one thing. And also, you know, learning how to deal with some of the maybe more vocal kids and not avoid them, but really learn how to deal with them directly right away. And I don't mean necessarily in a harsh way, but just more that you're not ignoring, you're not letting those kind of things slip and go too much, and you're addressing what needs to be addressed. And so I think some of those things really help a substitute right away. And by no means am I a master in that situation, but I did learn the hard way a lot of times also, you know?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. That's first, I'll never forget my first substitute teaching. It basically, I go there, it's in a class that I was a history teacher. I'm trying to get my first job as a history teacher. And the first class I substitute for is a graphic arts class. And there's a note that says, don't let them touch the machines. Good luck. And that's literally what he said. And I'm like, nice. There wasn't an assignment. And, you know, and we went from there. And I basically followed your advice because I had to create something for that day. And that was interesting. So I understand lessons for life. So let's talk in schools and school systems. Everything is about relationships and relationship building. Relationships with students, parents, the community, etc. Do you have any thoughts about how deeper listening skills and tuning into the person in front of you could really help educators become more effective?
Yeah, so I think it's along the lines of what we've been talking about where the more that you, and the same isn't true in all businesses actually, like the more that you put your full attention for a moment on the other side of the conversation, the other stakeholder, whoever that is, whether that's a parent, whether that's a student, whether that is a colleague, whether that's a principal, whether that's a board of directors, you know, whoever it might be, when you start to actually try to get their world for a moment and really listen in that way, I think that's really critical because that starts, they're going to feel that. And they're going to feel like it's not just your agenda mashing up against their agenda, which is often, too often what happens out there in negotiation land or in most situations. And so I think the more that educators can be clear about what their talking points are, that's important too, but also make room for listening to the other person's talking points and start to think about what's the win-win here. In other words, there's a me and there's a you, but what's the we space? What's the we space of what wants to happen? So what wants to happen between you and I in this negotiation right now or in this conversation? And how can we both start listening for that, like 1 + 1 = 3, which goes against the typical educator plan there. But 1 + 1 = 3, right? And so what is it that we want to create in this conversation? What is it that we want to create in this dynamic? And I think even if you say that out loud, that can be a very helpful preface or a very helpful context for whatever content is going to follow.
That's excellent because that's, you know, it's getting back to some of the thoughts you had before about the obstacles to good listening and so forth and connecting. I think lots of those fall into place because when you're working with whoever you're working with in a school setting or in an organizational setting, I think we can have a tendency to start thinking too much, and then we're not really endearing or connecting with the person and not listening to what they're saying or what they're doing. I mean, when you're working with kids, what's funny sometimes is that we're too busy thinking in our adult mind, whereas, you know, sometimes kids, you know, and adults will get upset because they're thinking the kid did it because, you know, it's directed towards them when really, hey man, I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be, what would happen if I did this? You know, it has nothing to do with you. I just did it, you know? And that's if we don't try and listen for understanding or getting that deep connection, I would think the same thing happens in how you lose sales and stuff like the same way. You know, the person's like, well, you don't even really see me in front of you, do you? You know, that type of thing.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And so that listening opens up that space for, once again, having that experience of being gotten and seen by each other. And hopefully that can happen on both sides.
That's excellent. So what I want to do now is I want to kind of take a look at something because all over the world, you know, I think they're getting a bad rap for some things, but millennials are a huge topic of discussion when it comes to being a leader and hiring and working with millennials and such. And schools and school systems are just the same. New teachers and new administrators are more and more millennials. What challenges does this create in the culture of an organization in recruiting, retaining, and training millennials?
Yeah, I'm going to say a couple things. I think one of them is I think millennials get some bad rap here. And I think part of that is we do this with every generation. And I think we seem to forget that we judge the next generation as being a little more lazy. They didn't have it as hard as us. They don't know what it's like to walk in the snow barefoot, going uphill. And I think we kind of do that with every generation. But then we forget that we do that.
I think that's hilarious, by the way. You're exactly right. Boom, nail on the head.
And so I think that's part of it is there is a little bit of unfair projection that gets put on the whole generation. That being said, I think there are certain challenges that the millennial generation has that other generations didn't have to have. And I do think there's a challenge of shorter attention span, a challenge of more technology and more overwhelming choices, sometimes a little bit less relationality because Social media has replaced a lot of that, and getting your endorphin rush of the likes and the all those kinds of things. And so sometimes I think there's a forgetting of authentic relating and the kind of nourishment that actually happens in flesh and blood relationships, not just on through internet. And so I think there's some challenges in the millennial generation around attention span. Some people say entitlement because they had it easier in certain ways. I mean, I think it depends on the individual, of course. But here's one thing I would say with employers, you know, for those who are employing millennial generation, is I think one of the gifts of the newer generations, the millennial generation, is that they're a little more able to smell the BS more than previous generations.
Nice.
And so if your company, let's just say your company culture or your school culture, is saying one thing, but they're not really living it, or they're saying, hey, these are our values, but you can tell that it's only maybe framed on the wall, but it's not actually being interacted with, I think millennials have a better emotional intelligence than previous generations. And I think millennials are more authentically, when they're really bought in, they're really bought in. But if they're not, they're not. If they're not engaged, they're not engaged. And so I think it's up to the school culture to really be aware of, how do we engage our staff? How do we get curious about what their values are? How do we get curious about their purpose and how their career trajectory, how we can serve their career trajectory? Are we even asking those questions in the interview? Are we asking, hey, why would you want to, you know, teach at our school system? And what would be, how, where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years? And how can we serve that? And, you know, those kind of questions where you're really getting at the deeper why behind their actions and their aspirations. I think that's really the key to getting a deeper buy-in with millennials, is connecting the purpose of your organization with the their individual purpose.
Oh, that's excellent. That's, you know, and that type of understanding who you have with you, and I have to go back to something you said. I mean, you're right. Every generation, I mean, we do easily forget that, you know, the generations before are complaining about the newest generation. And, you know, it's whether a baby boomer or a Gen Xer or wherever we are, and now with the millennials, there's always something there. But it is, I think you're right. I think they're a little quicker to recognize that, I think I need to call you out on whether you're really living this or not, because this is not my thing. And I like that idea there about, you know, make sure you ask those questions and get them to interact with you so you understand who it is that you have coming on board. I think that's good stuff. Do you think that's a failure sometimes of organizations, that they don't take the time to do that, that's where a coach could help them in coming up with how to, in this idea of retaining the newest generation?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, once again, it's like we know what we know, and sometimes we get really, if we've been successful, we get really settled into, well, I know how to do this. And that can become a dangerous place, because we can become complacent. We can become a little bit fossilized in certain ways. And then we're not actually open to how things change and learning systems change. Technology is changing how people learn. Video is more important than it's ever been, for example, and audio and other ways of learning, where back in the day it was only reading and writing and those kind of things. And now we're realizing actually kids learn in many different ways. And so if we're not hip to that, then we're limiting how we can impact the next generations. And so I think that's where it's important for educators, I think, to be open to how the next generation of educators are going to be in the most powerful position to give their gifts.
That's excellent. What I'd like to do, we're getting close to finishing up here. First of all, I want to ask you, do you have a book or favorite author that you would recommend to a leader who is working on changing the culture of their organization?
Yeah, one of my favorite, I would say, inspirers that I have is Simon Sinek. Do you know him?
Yes, very much so. I'm a big fan.
Oh, he's incredible. So I think, you know, that's one of my favorite books is, you know, Start With Why. I think he's just really become very accessible in how he writes and how he talks. And he really hits the nail on the head that to have a culture of leadership, you have to know why you're doing what you're doing and be able to communicate that to your team. And if you have a hard time doing that or you're not clear, your team's going to feel that. And then you're not really going to be able to enroll them in a powerful conversation. So I think that's one of my favorites. There's also an Irish poet named David White who actually consults in a lot of different organizations as well. And a lot of times poets don't make that jump where they actually move into the business world and poets actually make money and they're successful in that way.
Right.
But he actually did that. And
nice.
He's incredible. I went on a tour with him in Ireland and he has a lot of things to say about conversational leadership. He's actually coined that term, conversational leadership. And what's the conversation your culture is having? And what's the conversation that your culture is not having?
Excellent. Tell me again his name. How do you spell his last name?
His name is David White, and it's W-H-Y-T-E. And so he's an Irish poet, but he lives in Whidbey Island, Washington. And he's another inspirer, how he really is able to elicit the soul or the roots of a company culture and the conversation that's happening underneath the conversation and really getting at the heart of what people should be talking about that they might be avoiding in their collective meetings, let's say.
Excellent. I'll put links in my show notes to both Simon Sinek and to Mr. White, and that'll be great information there. That'd be awesome and encourage people to check that out. That's good stuff. So now you said, I understand you have a book coming out. You mentioned that earlier. So I hope that we get a chance to talk again when your book is all set to come out, because I'd love to talk to you about it. Got an idea when it's coming out?
Yeah, thank you, by the way. That'd be great. I'd love to come back. And right now it's scheduled for publication in early 2019.
Excellent.
So the publisher, it's in their queue, and then there's all the things they need to do on that side, and it takes a while in the machine of it all. But I'm excited to have that out in the world, and that should be early 2019. And like I said, it's all about how do you make your teams and your company more intuitive.
Excellent. Excellent. Look forward to it coming out, and wish you the best with it. So in the meantime, if a listener would like to reach out to you and learn more, what would be the best way?
Yeah, so I do offer consulting and coaching to many different organizations and businesses. And those on my team as well. And so they can find me at 3hats.com, and that's 3 spelled out, hyphen hats, plural, .com. And you can also find me on Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter at Rick A. Snyder is my handle.
Excellent. I'll put those in the show notes as well, links, so that people can choose which way they want to reach out to you. So excellent. Well, I got last two questions, and they go like this. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new school leaders who are getting ready to open the doors of their first school or school system in a month, what advice would you give them?
I would start with get clear about your vision first. What is your vision for the school year or for the whole community that you're leading? So I would, and actually write it down. Don't just have it in your head, but actually take the practice of writing down your vision of what you want the end of the year to look like, what you want the end of the year to feel like, to act like and perform like, and then work backwards from there. So if I know exactly what I want the end of 2019 to look like, let's say, what does that mean for this first semester? And so that way you can start to connect the dots of what you're doing every day to that bigger vision that you're leading toward.
Excellent advice. Love that. So last question. Do you have a teacher or coach in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Wow, that's a good question. I have a lot of different mentors who've definitely impacted my life for sure. I'm trying to think of, there's like so many, I'm trying to think of one that really stands out in this moment. Let's see. I would say right now I went to graduate school and studied psychology in graduate school, and there's a mentor named Dwayne Molnar. So Dwayne, if you're listening, he was this is in Colorado, and he really mentored for me when I was learning to be a therapist. Actually, originally I was trained as a therapist, and he mentored for me more than anyone, be yourself. And that's actually the healing ingredient that people need. It's not about doing it like the other master therapists or mastering all these techniques or memorizing whatever the book says or whatever Freud said or this or that. But really, it's the art of being your authentic self, your genuine self, that people, that will actually be the opening element with other people. And then they'll learn eventually to do that for themselves too. That's what you're modeling. And there was a way he just brought that in the room in a very experiential way that somehow shifted my whole orientation about like, oh, I need to do therapy, or I need to teach like Dwayne does, or I need to do it like so-and-so does. And instead of like, no, wait a minute, what's my way? And what's my way of learning how to integrate this material that's personal to me? And he was right. I mean, that really landed in me back then, and I'll never forget that. Thank you, Dwayne.
That's awesome. That is excellent. That, you know, it's when people have that impact on you, it's just neat to be able to reflect on that and hear how other people have had impact on people's lives. So thank you for sharing. Well,
thanks for asking that. Yeah.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for joining me today. Good luck with the book coming out. I love this about the intuition and the good listening and the relationships. And I think it hits right to the heart of change and making organizations work the way they should, and being able to connect with people. And in the world of school, we're all about relationship building, and it requires the listening. And we do our own selling, whether we want to admit it or not. We are all about that. And I love the idea of, you know, the mentorship and the coaching and how that can work. I've just enjoyed talking with you. Three hats, intuition, wishing you the best in all that you do. And I can't wait till that book comes out in 2019. Looking forward to reading it. So, and love to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for all the listeners as well. And I look forward to coming back.
Excellent. Have a great day.
Okay. Take good care. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.